This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Scott Simon, and our pages are missing. This week, two important pages of the House budget proposal go missing. We haven't seen them, but reaction was mixed.
I say thank God for the incompetence or the mistake or the inadvertence or whatever it was that will now allow us to read this budget, will allow the people at home to read the budget over a week.
It's my responsibility. I apologize to the body for that. My recommendation is that we take the opportunity that has been given to us to read it carefully and then debate it carefully on Tuesday. And
Congressman Gerald Nadler, first Democrat of New York, and then Budget Committee Chairman Jim Nussle, Republican of Iowa, speaking on the House floor Friday. Dan Shore joins us. What is wrong with me? His pages are in order. Morning, Dan. You better take over.
Let me try to take over. I think it should be mentioned, first of all, you say pages are in order. It should be mentioned that session that went on until 3 o'clock yesterday morning, mm-hmm. where they decided that out of a 2-inch thick resolution, that two pages were missing, that Congressman Barney Frank took the floor in order to assure the nation that the missing pages were just paper pages, not to those young people who work in Congress. But there you are.
Listen, this budget boo-boo, if you please, gave the House an extra few days to look over the budget. Do you need any extra time? What do you think you've noticed in the document?
Well, all I would say about it is that the whole procedure is quite bizarre, is looked upon by an ordinary person who doesn't understand all these mysteries. First of all, they start with a big numbers game in trillions of dollars, and they arrive at a so-called compromise figure, $1.35 trillion in tax cuts over 11 years. Having done that, they have not yet decided what they need to spend and what they have to say. All the government has to spend for defense, for education, for entitlement programs, various kinds, all of that, we don't even yet know yet what will need to be spent, but we do know how much they want to give back in taxes from a surplus which is becoming less and less sure.
Well, now. How do lawmakers establish the size of the tax cut before they know how much money the departments have to get, various government departments?
You just do it. You just say, you see, you're putting your finger on what is the whole new wonderful idea that they have found. It used to be that you say, we're going to have so much money. Mm-hmm. Out of that, we have so much we need to spend for Social Security, for Medicare, maybe prescription drugs, maybe all those things. You add up the amount that you need to spend. And then how much do we have left over? Because we have some left over, we can give some back in tax cuts. They've adopted another way of doing mm-hmm. it. First, the tax cut. Then you decide whether you have enough money to run the government.
Now, would another President Bush refer to that as voodoo economics?
I think that somebody might refer to it as voodoo economics, but I don't think that our former president would do so today.
He does have a powerful personal motive otherwise.
Right.
Any other surprises you notice in the document?
No, the only thing I would call a surprise would go like this. I think what they're letting themselves in for is all kinds of surprises. You have this rosy scenario now of this huge $5.6 trillion revenue surplus. And the question is whether that projection holds anymore. Everybody always said that it was only a projection that could change. Here you have suddenly this surprise 4.5% unemployment in April, and now you begin seeing renewed fears of recession. If there is a recession or even a downturn, the revenue projections may have to change. Then we may be heading into some kind of energy crisis. If we have an energy crisis, that will have an effect on industrial activity, mm-hmm. and that may change the projections. I'll tell you, the only consolation about this whole budget process is this thing called the budget resolution, which is going to be such a big victory for President Bush if and when it gets through. All of that is a non-binding resolution. It's mm-hmm. only a guideline. Everything in it in terms of taxes has to be legislated. Everything in it in terms of spending still has to be appropriated. So it is really a political process, the meaning of which I'm not sure of.
President Bush announced a major change, a course and direction in this nation's security this week. He wants to go ahead with a national missile defense.
Yeah.
Technology hasn't been established yet. The very premise of it, of insulating this nation from attack, seems to upset the balance established by the 1972 anti-ballistic missile treaty. Mm-hmm. But the lines of the world have been substantially redrawn since 1972. Do you think that treaty is or is not as outdated as the administration suggests?
Well, it is outdated in a certain sense. It was signed by President Nixon and Brezhnev in 1972. It has served during those years as a pretty good cornerstone for all the other arms control agreements. The concept was that neither the United States nor the Soviet Union would dare to attack the other, knowing that it couldn't escape retaliation because nobody has an ABM system to attack. Well, that seemed to work pretty well. What happens now is you may say that it's outdated, but here is Russia, which still has some 5,000 nuclear warheads, even if it's not the Soviet Union anymore, and they're not terribly well protected, and people are worried about loose nukes that could fall mm-hmm. into terrorist hands or be transferred to some rogue state. And the trouble is that if you say the ABM treaty is outdated and let's get out of it so we can build a missile defense, you send a signal to Russia and to China and even to a lot of our allies that make them worry, and then the question is what they do to retaliate and respond to our saying we unilaterally are going to make our own way in the world by having our own missile defense.
Mm-hmm. And the worst scenario would be they would test the technology before it's established or demonstrated.
And the worst part of it, one of the bad parts of this whole thing is that we're losing political points for a technology that nobody knows yet whether we'll ever have.
The Chinese, if you know, have voiced strong concerns, but some people have been surprised that the Russians so far seem as open-minded as they are.
Oh, don't be surprised. The Russians are simply playing for time at this point. If the United States says it wants to consult, they say, "Очень хорошо, great, we'll consult." Mm-hmm. Because as long as they can keep talking, then nothing is happening. They've come across with a cockamamie missile defense plan of their own to give them something to talk about. The current moderation is only a way of saying that as long as you don't do anything and you want to talk, we're with you. But once you start doing something, then, well, the arms race is on again. All these other things will happen again. I would not take the current Russian moderation as opposed to the rather vigorous response from China. Mm-hmm. I would not take that to mean they're anywhere near accepting our ideas.
Let me ask another question about the Chinese. They allowed some Americans to inspect that Navy EP-3 plane that's still there, but at one point apparently turned off the electricity. What's going on there?
Well, the Chinese are playing very Chinese games, and what they're now saying is, okay, you can see the plane, and you may have decided, as apparently they have, that it can be fixed up well enough to fly it out of Hainan, but the Chinese are not letting that happen yet. So what is the United States doing? Playing its own game with China by first saying that we're going to suspend all military contacts with China until they behave better, and then that seems to have been the wrong thing to say, so it really is, no, we suspend it only on a case-by-case basis. That's the way I buy wine, on a case-by-case, on a case-by-case basis. And, of course, they find some staff person to blame for having made the error. They're apparently still worried about whether the Chinese are going to let us fly that plane out of there.
What do you make of the surprise and secret vote at the UN this week? For the first time since the UN Human Rights Commission was created in 1947, the U.S. did not win a seat on that commission.
Well, since the ballot was secret, we don't exactly know who voted against us. We do know that the lobbying campaign against the United States was led by China and by Cuba, those great upholders of human rights. I think what is really involved here is growing resentment, not only Russia, Cuba, and China, all the rest of it, but growing resentment against the United States, which doesn't pay its dues for human rights, but then lectures the world on human rights. There is a more and more tendency to say, America, if you want to make your own way in the world, go make your own way in the world.
Thanks very much, Dan Shore.